Hi, I'm Ella Joyce, and when I'm in New York, I listen to WBAI 99.5 FM. The more you listen, the more you learn.
We're back again. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, and we're hosting, of course, Vantage Point today. One of the things I want to stress is becoming a WBAI buddy. I talked about this last week. I will be talking about it every show. It is a point of emphasis here at WBAI as we work hard to build a solid and sustainable foundation so that this medium, if you will, this critical medium that carries these critical informative conversations can continue. Because they are the base, ultimately, we hope, for activism. You just heard an announcement about the ability to come and sit in a cafe and to learn how to become an independent entrepreneur, if you will, to break away from, back in the day, we used to say that slave, if you will. George Frazier, our guest at 11:30, we'll be talking about some of that. That's what he specializes in as well. That's one of the reasons we have him coming on. So we have all of this incredible information here on WBAI, and we need you to continue to support it. So one way to do that is simply by becoming a WBAI buddy for as little as $10 a month. For as little as $10 a month, you can become a WBAI buddy. You can, and that means that you'll be making a monthly, what's called recurring contribution. And when you're doing a business or doing an organization or budget, it's so good to know where that steady revenue is coming from. You know you can count on so much that's coming in every month. And that's what WBAI needs. If we could get literally thousands of people to become WBAI buddies, it would really lessen the need to do, we still have fund drives, but I'm saying obviously to the degree that those fund drives yield people who are going to be consistent givers, it relieves the pressure to some degree. So I'm urging you in the name of Vantage Point, my friends and supporters out there, you know, and sometimes it just have to go do it. It's you know, and I'm guilty. I mean, sometimes I'll look at a cause that I want to support and I mean to do it. And it may take me, you know, a month, a couple of weeks. Sometimes, you know, it takes me time to get around to it sometimes. So I'm not being sanctimonious in terms of these things. I try to support a lot of things. I really do. But sometimes it takes me a while to get it done. So I understand that. But getting it done is important. So I'm asking my friends, supporters of IBW, Institute of the Black World 21st Century, supporters of Dr. Ron Daniels, a radio activist out here who is delighted to be a part of WBAI, to support Vantage Point and WBAI by becoming a WBAI buddy. So you can go to the website, WBAI, just pull it up, and you'll find a spot there where you can actually do that. And again, it can be as little as $10 a month, and you get a nice little set of goodies, WBAI tote bag and a whole bunch of other stuff. And there's some perks that come with it as well. And so you really want to do that. We're pushing that very hard. Become a WBAI buddy. Now, there are a couple of things that happened over the weekend which struck, I'm sure, all of us in a way that is painful. And in some instances, one is painful, one is infuriating. Let me put it that way. The painful one is the ongoing situation in Chicago. In Chicago, it's become simply the metaphor for what is happening in myriads urban cities, urban communities, particularly distressed, marginal Black communities all across this nation. And so we received the news. Actually, I tend to watch sports a bit because, frankly, some of the mainstream media stuff is so light and so fluffy. So if it's going to be light and fluffy, I might as well get off my sports Jones. So I watch sports programs, and it was interesting that actually I was out in California working on the Proposition 64, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, and happened to turn on television, and I saw, you know, a group of people sitting around in Chicago, including Michael Eric Dyson, Stephen A. Smith, and Isaiah Thomas. They were talking about what was going on in Chicago, and there have been a number of these town hall meetings. Spike Lee did an amazing, shocking, startling, controversial film called Chi-Rock on this issue. The most recent version of Barbershop also had scenes dealing with the carnage, the fratricide, the internal violence that is consuming, ripping apart the fabric of Chicago, particularly the South Side and again, some of the marginalized communities. And by all means, let me just say this, contrary to Donald Trump's madness, I mean, the vast majority of black people in these communities are working class black people. Some are poor, some middle class indeed, who are just struggling to survive and thrive and make it. But there's a, inside of that, there are issues of people who are engaged in behaviors which cause a lot of pain. And so I did not see the town hall meeting with Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade is the he got a couple of rings, a 2- or 3-time champion, formerly with the Miami Heat, but now is playing with the Chicago Bulls. And he was on a town hall meeting on ESPN, and they were all talking about violence and wiping out. So within 24 hours, then you get the shocking news that Nakia Aldridge, his cousin, is killed while taking her, going to school to enroll her kids, got a little baby in the stroller, and down the street come a couple of brothers shooting at someone that they thought had a gun, just blazing. Innocent person, senseless, killed. And of course, that again brought the spotlight on what's going on in Chicago. Over the weekend, since that, 4 more people killed, 24 wounded. Question is, where does it stop? When is enough enough? Well, enough is always long since enough being enough. The problem that incenses me, frankly, is that this does not take rocket science. It's not rocket science. And that's why, and I'm penning a couple pieces this week. One is going to be entitled Racism Kills. And by that I mean that when we look at the Chicagos of the world, we see the sort of the blatant, callous neglect of black communities. There was a brother named Richard Moore, Latino brother from out in the Southwest Organizing Group. I also, Richard Moore. He said, "We are the wrong complexion to get the protection. That's why it's racist." Because if this were going on in a predominantly white community, even a poor white community, this kind of carnage, it'd be a state of emergency, because it is a state of emergency. And all kind of resources would be poured in there. People would be trying to figure out how to resolve it, as opposed to doing the national head scratching and hand wringing about what's going on in Chicago. Michael Eric Dyson and Isaiah Thomas, almost everybody knows what's needed. Good jobs with good wages, quality education, housing. But now, even more, we got to rehabilitate some human beings, because the trauma has been so horrific that we now have to really rebuild, you know, human beings. Because those brothers who were down the street shooting like that, you know, and, you know, they're our brothers. They're a part of our community. But there's something gone wrong when you just, when you don't have a moral compass, you don't have a, your values have eroded. And that erosion is a function of the disinvestment in black communities. It's a function of deindustrialization, the absence of jobs, and the fact that we live in a callous society that really doesn't care what happens in these communities. And so you do have, as a consequence, growing crime, because jobs have disappeared. Work has disappeared in these communities. What's needed is something equivalent to, and we've been calling this in IBW, a domestic Marshall Plan. Not new, not something we created. A former director of the Urban League, whose name I'm blanking on now, for years and years and years, even before it got this bad, was saying we needed a domestic Marshall Plan. to rebuild the urban areas. There's been no urban policy. Since Clinton, Frank, the Clinton administration years ago kind of downplayed it. These communities have been left, really, without the resources they need. And then you have mayors like Rahm Emanuel, and this is repeated in other cities, even under black mayors, who shut down schools, that really ought to be the heartbeat of these communities in many respects. The hub, simply because it's not cost effective, the budget shaving that goes down. I remember Reverend Jesse Jackson talking about the fact of how many counselors in Chicago, the number they need and the number they have. There's a huge gap, both psychological and counseling, as well as career counseling. And so Michael Eric Dyson talked about it, you know, and so did Isaiah Thomas. If almost any, and we do, and IBW does this work in these communities, in Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. We sit around a table, we talk to young people. Within a few minutes, jobs. That's what's coming out of their mouth, jobs. It was in Washington, D.C., and some brothers, you know, some stuff was going down, and the brother said, look, we got a program for you. You know, we'll turn in our guns for jobs. But we're in a situation. And I was just reading a piece this morning because we're in this conservatism, this right-wing, conservative, restrictive notion of government, this small governance madness that has been ushered in by the right wing. And now, since growth is, you know, slow and stagnant, and I just read a piece this morning, more and more economists are saying this whole thing about low interest rates and all that just hasn't really triggered the economy. They're saying you need to do something that the conservatives don't want to do. You need to spend some money. There's a need for more government spending. Yes, because you go back to John Maynard Keynes. That's it's not new. That in times of economic crisis, you really don't cut the budget. You spend. You inject resources. You prime the pump. That's what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did. That's what the New Deal drove. So now economists are saying this austerity is madness. Need government spending. Because despite the fact that you have low interest rates, all these tax rates, these private corporations are not spending enough. They're sitting on it. They're hoarding it. You have greater inequality. You need the government to become a player. And a part of that is jobs. Back in the day with the CETA program and other programs, but beyond that, there were times when the government would come out and just create just a million jobs, public service jobs, helping to clean up parks, helping to build things. I mean, it's not just make work jobs. There's a lot of work to be done. Put people to work, not necessarily in the private sector, but government jobs. That would do a lot to end the violence and fratricide in these communities. But it's racist because we're disproportionately impacted in these black and brown communities, and nobody cares. I mean, it's hand-wringing. You know, we have the national pundits talking about it. And, you know, and what are we going to do? And it's terrible. And people ought to modify their behavior. Well, modifying behavior is one thing. Having a job is quite another. Having an economic ability to sustain yourself is another. So we need that. We need that push. And we're certainly going to need to push whomever is the new president. It very much looks like it's going to be Hillary Clinton. That's got to be at the forefront. We need a domestic Marshall Plan. And to tell you about the racist nature of this, we're talking about the drug war. And the war on drugs is a war on us. Marijuana arrests, no matter where you go. Washington, D.C., classic example. All those colleges and universities there. The studies, the ACLU and Lawyers Committee, you know that up on campuses, Georgetown and so forth and so on, you know them, the students are smoking weed. You know, but the people who are being arrested disproportionately are black people. I mean, overwhelmingly. And then whether it's heroin, crack or whatever, the disparity, the crack and cocaine disparity that went down that sent so many black people into jail, same substance, white folks using powder, black folks using crack. And then we end up, you know, with the harshest, it's institutionally racist, structurally racist. Now, check this out. Now, the opiate crisis has exploded. And this opiate thing is largely a white thing. And I'm not saying that in a narrow way. It's mostly in the suburbs, rural, poor communities and so forth. This opiate crisis has exploded. And it is being addressed in the correct way. They're treating it as a public health crisis. These people are not largely being criminalized. They're not saying, oh, my God, send them to jail. Let's do this. Let's have law enforcement. They're saying, oh, no. All of a sudden, the Congress of the United States rushed through a bill to help allocate money to help these communities deal with treatment and education. That's an appropriate response. But why can't black people be treated that way? Why is it that white people got one response and black people got another response? That's the issue that makes the response the lack thereof in Chicago. Racism, and racism kills. It produces the conditions that leads people to do insane things. The brutalization of our communities has created brutality. And that's not condoning what's going on with people shooting each other and these senseless killings and all of this stuff. And then the access to guns and all that stuff. And these, our brothers and sisters, we're going to have to do some healing. Gonna have to do some real rehabilitation, because as Cornel Wells says, there's a certain sector of our community, there's a certain nihilism that begins to develop in these communities when you don't have sort of an environment, a healthy environment. And the absence of that healthy environment is not something we created. It was created by external forces. And by the fact that instead of finishing the civil rights, human rights agenda, we got the war on drugs, we got the police, we got policing, and the police being incentivized, if you will, to arrest us, to harass us, and all those kinds. We need jobs, not harassment. The old tired phrase, jail, jobs, not jails. It's not rocket science. But the society refuses to do what's right because we're the wrong complexion to get the protection. And now, let me turn to an issue that I also talked about a little bit a few weeks ago that I am utterly infuriated about. Some of you may know and follow football. I do. I like sports. So Colin Kaepernick was really a sensational quarterback a couple of years ago. Came almost won a Super Bowl, if you will. Came very, very, very close. Not been too good the last couple of years. But it's so good that more and more athletes, and I think the passing away, the transition of Muhammad Ali also contributed to this, because it again showed the world what a conscious athlete could do. And certainly Black Lives Matter exploding onto the scene with this courageous, visionary sense that black bodies, black lives matter, all of them, if you will, has given a certain sense of courage, a certain sense of backbone to the black community again, which is utterly needed, a sense of resistance. I think it's very, very encouraging. So Colin Kaepernick decided that he, when the national anthem was being played, would sit down. He wouldn't stand up. And by the way, there's no law that says that you have to stand up for the national anthem. It is custom. It is really more way, put it that way. But I'm going to be talking about some definitions in my class this evening. More ways is strong. It's not a law. It's a custom. It's kind of expected. It's a prescription. You are expected customarily to stand up for the national anthem. He said, I'm not standing. Sat down. In fact, he had been sitting down. But then the other day, he was sitting down in his uniform. And all of a sudden, a firestorm erupts. Now, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that the gymnast, Simone Biles, is the sensation now. But a couple of years ago, in the last Olympic, it was Gabby Douglas. So she's a part of this incredible U.S. Gymnast team. So they were there getting their medals. And she inadvertently didn't put her hand over her heart. And all of a sudden, it was all over social media. How dare she get up on the platform and don't put her and disrespect the United States of America? I mean, you know, she just inadvertently, but even if she didn't inadvertently, she has a First Amendment right not to put her hand on her heart, to sing the anthem, do anything with the anthem. That's the first point. But beyond that, and I've been listening to them pontificate about, oh, he's disrespecting the soldiers and so forth. Well, Black soldiers have fought for this country from the very beginning. You know, if you go back to Crispus Attucks, arguably the first person to die fighting for these United States of America. Stokely Carmichael used to say, or Kwame Ture said, he was crazy for doing so. So you know, and a part of what he was saying is, over and over again, black people have been in the forefront of fighting for this country. Even when this country did not provide them with rights, fought for America when America would not stand up and fight for us. So we have no obligation at any time to stand up for the national anthem, ever. And the other reason we don't have to do it, because we paid the price. We paid the price. Black people have fought in every war. Reluctantly, thousands were at Breed Hill and Bunker Hill. George Washington didn't want them. The British said they would take them, and so he reluctantly did arm them, and they fought in the American Revolution. Abraham Lincoln didn't want them either. Black folks were marching with their own feet. They were before the Emancipation Proclamation were beginning to move, abandoning these plantations, crippling them economically. And so all of a sudden, Gentleman Beast Butler said, wait a minute, they're coming by the thousands. What must we do with them? And Abraham Lincoln said, well, they might make soldiers. And by the thousands, black people fought in the Civil War for our own freedom. You know, also we're with the Rough Riders, for better or worse, probably worse in this instance, carrying on Manifest Destiny in the war in that took place in the Caribbean, if you will. And then in the First World War, again, black folks fought, and as I pointed out, they had to fight under the French flag. They weren't even permitted to fight. Black Jack Pershing wouldn't allow them to fight under the American flag. And yet we went, and we fought, and we bled. And when we came back, black folks were gunned down in the streets in their own uniforms. In these United States of America, we are the most patient patriots. Don't tell me about having to stand up for anything. It's the right to sit down, the right to protest. Went to the Second World War, came back, still segregation, still not having to go to the back of the bus, still in a situation where we did not have first-class citizenship. Korean War, the same thing. Vietnam, coming back to these urban inner-city areas, again, that began to explode because of inequality and the kind of depths of poverty that have yet to be resolved. And now, black bodies being gunned down in the streets, black folks being harassed, situations like Chicago, a state of emergency, so black people don't have to stand up. And we need to stand with Colin Kaepernick, not let him be isolated in the way that Juan Carlos and Tommy Smith were in that Olympics. They paid a hell of a price for standing there and putting with those clenched fists. For years, they were ostracized, and we kind of let them hang out there. We cannot let that happen. Got to stand with these athletes who have the guts and the courage to stand up. And I finish on this note as I listen to that anthem, which needs to be rewritten, talking about our anthem. Every time it gets to that phrase in there and it says, and our flag was still there in 1812 when black people, 4 million people, 3.5 million were enslaved. The other 500,000 were quasi-free. Our flag, we don't have to stand. It's like Rosa Parks. She sat down so that others could stand tall. Colin Kaepernick is sitting down so that black people can stand up to oppression. The nation's attention can be called to the fact that we are yet free, that the dream that Martin Luther King articulated on that monument in 1963 has yet to be achieved. So therefore, we salute him for what he's doing. And they don't want me on the air. They don't want me on any of these programs. That's why I'm glad I'm on WBAI. I can say what I want to say. Straight up. No chaser. Because if I get on one of these programs, Well, y'all might have to come get me because I don't like it at all. I am utterly infuriated at the way this man is being treated, as if he has to stand up because the history hasn't been told and the folks don't actually know. That's why I like the red, black, and green. If he wants to stand for anything, let him stand up for the red, black, and green. And we're going to be talking about the red, black, and green at the State of the Black World Conference, because that's the flag of black people, the universal flag of black people. And I'm glad to see that Black Lives Matter is proudly waving. You see it coming back again. That also is a symbol of resistance, of affirmation, because as far as I'm concerned, and I've talked about this way back in my presidential campaign in 1992, that we need a new covenant for a new society. And a part of that new covenant would be a new anthem and a new flag that reflects the histories of Latinos and Asians and women and workers in a much more respectful way than that red, white, and blue anyhow. And an anthem that does the same thing. Well, I'm off the soapbox now. Going to take a break here, come back. And Nataki Cambone will be talking to us about Let's Buy Black 365 and also some discussions about the economic empowerment sessions that we're going to be offering at the State of the Black World Conference. We'll be right back after this break.
And we're back with Ron Daniels, Professor Ron Daniels, with the program Vantage Point over radio station WBAI at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Professor Daniels.
Yes. Oh, we're back. Okay. I thought I was waiting for the music to chime in there because also get catching my breath a little bit. Now we're joined in the conversation by Nataki Cambone. Nataki Cambone is the founder of Let's Buy Black 365. Nataki Cambone, welcome again to Vantage Point.